ladies and gentlemen, in your face with Alan Grace.
Yay! All right. Thank you, George. That was beautiful. Hello, Al.
Hello, Grace.
How are you, my dearest?
All right, how are you?
I'm just divine.
What's going on?
I'm divine. What can I tell you? I could go into a litany of woe is me's, but I never do woo. I'm that kind of gal. Mm-hmm. Very nice. Sometimes. Most of the time. 99.9% of the time. All right, so why don't we get to it, because I really want to talk to Lou. We have
this very
wonderful, wonderful guest. Thank you for coming on.
My pleasure.
Lou Luminek. Am I correct with that?
That's
one?
Correct.
And he was a movie critic for the New York Post from 1999, was it?
1999 to
2016.
Yes.
And prior to that, you were also, you were an editor of something on the Post?
I was a film editor.
Uh-huh.
I supervised the staff of other critics as well. And I was a blogger for part of that time, and I was I wrote a lot of, beside criticism, I wrote a lot of interviews and stuff.
Movie reviews.
Oh, yeah, movie reviews.
Oh, and with people. You talk to some of the actors and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Interviews. Cool. Very cool. So you're a native New Yorker.
Yeah, Queens, Astoria.
What got you so into the flicks?
I've just been very interested in classic films since childhood. I mean, I was so into it when I was a child. I would do my own TV schedules with films that I had seen and films that I wanted to see.
So you're like
you
a movie.
You must have
dude.
Been, very excited at, because when I was growing up in New York, it was channels 2, 4, 5, 7, 9, 11, and, 13 if you didn't want to fall, and then wrestling in Spanish on 47 or something like that. But with cable TV coming out, I mean, it opened up the whole thing for a lot more content needed and a lot more movies that we can watch and even stations dedicated to older classic movies.
TCM, baby.
Back in the 60s, you could only dream of an all movie network.
Right, exactly.
Which is what I did. I would do schedules without nothing but movies. But nobody was programming.
So had you grown up today, you would have had no childhood hobby.
I guess. Well, my parents were very concerned about my childhood.
They
sent me to a psychologist, and I ended up having to hide my TV schedules.
Seriously?
Yeah, seriously.
That's a riot. What was wrong with that?
They had a great imagination, and what? The kids today don't have that.
I know.
They don't grow up with that kind of imagination.
Because everything is like click, 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 click.
Yeah.
Click,
no, right. Social.
I mean, I had to write those babies out by hand.
How old were you?
I was probably, like six or seven when
so
I started.
So you're like a real smarty pants kid.
Yeah.
Kind of, and your parents, they weren't obviously into the film stuff, right?
Well, my mother took me to see one of the earliest movies I ever remember. Actually, the first movie I remember seeing in the theater was The Man with the Golden Arm.
Frank Sinatra
plays a junkie.
Sal Mineo, right?
Your mom took you to that.
My mom took me out when I was 6 years old.
No.
When I was 6 years old.
Oh, my God.
At that point, we lived in the Queensbridge Projects in Long Island City. And,
uh-huh.
And she took me to see this picture, and I was scared witless. many years later.
He's even making a fist now.
Many, yeah, so I've never actually been able to sit through it again. I mean, many years later, I was doing an interview with Kim Novak, who's the co-star of the movie,
yep.
and I told her about this, and she said, "What was wrong with your mother?"
Really?
Said, well,
I
said you got 2 or 3 hours, maybe, but she said, "Well, but I bet you never did drugs," and guess what? She was right.
Yeah.
Straight and narrow.
Yeah,
that would scare me to death.
So do you think that was an ulterior motive of hers to take you to that movie
at six?
At six? To scare you of heroin, or she just...
Well, Kim Novak thinks so. I don't know. My mother, was, I think, too disorganized to really, to come up with that.
She probably just liked Frank Sinatra, maybe.
Yeah, she loved Frank. She loved Frank Sinatra. So and she also loved that. She also loved The King and I. We went to see that a couple of times.
There you go.
So you went to some nice movies.
Yeah.
When did you talk to Kim Novak? Was that at TCM Festival?
No, I interviewed her, about 8 or 9 years ago. She was promoting a DVD release of her films.
Oh, cool. Her Vertigo.
No, it was the one she did for Columbia, like Picnic, which my Aunt Rose was a huge fan of.
Your Aunt Rose.
I saw it at this old theater, the Grand Theater in Astoria, underneath the L. And, I mean, it closed about 1960. That's how long ago this was.
Wow. But there was one other thing. Your Aunt Rose took you to that. So you just went through your therapy. You went to college.
Yep, I went to college at CCNY.
And you studied film.
There was only one film class at City College in those days. Now they have a whole film program. It was one class. It was a survey class. Was taught by this well, I thought it was an old man. He's like 15 years younger than I am now. named Herman Weinberg, who had done subtitles for foreign films, and in fact, he started doing subtitles before there were talkies. I mean, he was running title cards for foreign films, and so he taught this survey class, and I got to see directors like Lubitsch and.
Cool.
And von Sternberg, it was great. It really opened my eyes of the possibilities of what was out there in film. But I did a terrible thing to Herman. A friend of mine, was looking for this was in the 60s when we were all trying to avoid being drafted.
Yeah.
So he was looking for an easy class that he didn't have to actually go to. And I told him Herman never took attendance. So he never showed up for the class. And I went to the class I wanted to see more movies, so I went to the class every week. And then at the end he comes to me and said, I have to hand in a paper. And the paper was a review of Herman's book on Ernst Lubitsch. And so I had like an hour to write a review for my friend. And I thought about it, and I had gotten a B in the class, but I thought about it. I said, well, Herman has this incredible ego. And so I just wrote a paper that continually compared Herman to his idol, the director, Ernst Lubitsch. And so so my friend Johnny hands it in. And for some reason, he showed up for the final class, and Herman says, "Is Jonathan Newman here?" And Jonathan's thinks he's busted, and he stands up and is sheepishly, and Herman says, "I want you to look at this young man. I've been teaching film classes for 30 years, and I've never seen somebody write a better paper."
I guess he got a good grade, huh?
But there's actually a capper to that story. Jonathan went on to win a Pulitzer Prize for journalism.
Wow!
Wow!
So yeah. I ghost wrote a paper for a Pulitzer Prize winner.
Well, that's very good. Bravo for that, Lou. I am fascinated how one becomes a film critic for a paper or for TV or something. Do you pass a test? Do they make you watch the movies and you review and then you look it over?
I get, how you do it. I mean, you go see a lot of movies, including a lot of movies that you would not, that nobody in their right mind would choose to see.
Yeah.
And, it depends on the publication you're writing for. You're writing for the Post. Your main goal is to entertain the reader.
Yeah.
And you find funny things to say, and the Post loved it when I would do this really super, extreme panning of movies. They loved that particularly.
Now, why did you leave the Post to pursue other?
Well, I retired.
Oh, you retired. Okay.
Yeah, I retired. I mean, I've been working for Daily News, but for 48 years, and after you know, enough was enough.
That's a long time.
There were other things I wanted to do with my life before, you know.
Yeah. So you went there. One thing that makes me interested about critics, did anyone ever try to bribe you to give them a good review?
No, that only, I mean, that happens in, like, you know, in the producers, but
No. Did you ever get death threats because you gave a bad review?
I did get death threats, but it had nothing. It had nothing to do with
a review.
Do you find that the modern age now of the internet has changed the role of the movie critic at all?
Oh yeah, I mean, when I started reviewing, and I actually started reviewing, you know, for a newspaper in New Jersey, the Bergen Record, in 1981. I mean, you know, there were very few film critics, and we all had this, you know, tremendous power. And actually, you know, not that many people wanted to be film critics in 1981. But now everybody wants to be a film critic, and everybody is a film critic.
And on YouTube, on
their
whatever.
Own Facebook page.
Yes,
you know?
I know.
Yelp.
Yeah. We hate Yelp.
Yeah, I hate Yelp.
We get Yelp. So you, I think I remember you as the guest programmer on TCM.
Yes, they did a series called. Critics' Choice in 2010. A bunch of critics were on.
And what did you choose?
I chose two pretty obscure movies. I chose a picture called The Last Flight, which is about American flyers in Paris after World War I. It's a very good knockoff of The Sun Also Rises.
What year was that made?
1931.
And then All Through the Night? Was that
All
the
Through
other
the
one?
Night, the Humphrey
Bogart
movie. Picture.
George Raft.
Yeah, they're like, nobody knows that picture.
Alan Hale Sr.
No, not Alan Hale Sr.
Didn't Alan Hale Sr. in that movie own the trucking company or something?
No, they drive by night.
Oh, they drive
all,
by night.
All Through the Night.
Oh, All Through the Night.
It's
okay.
Night is a comedy thriller.
Oh, okay.
Bogart plays a gambler, as they call him. He actually is. It's pretty clear if you watch the film closely. He's running a numbers racket, and he lives in Yorkville, and he becomes involved.
He was born, actually, right? Yorkville?
Actually, on the west side. West side.
His parents were wealthy.
Like 105th Street and West End Avenue. Okay. I mean, he came from a very wealthy family.
Yes.
But, you know, he becomes involved in trying to stop Nazi saboteurs. I mean, in some ways,
I know that movie.
It's almost like a prequel to Casablanca. The characters are similar, although it's a comedy. I mean, you have Conrad Veidt.
I love him.
Is also in both films, and Peter Lorre's in both films.
Well, who couldn't love him?
Peter Lorre.
Was this the one? I'm thinking of one with Mary Astor. That they did.
No, that was Maltese Falcon.
That's across Maltese Falcon and Across the Pacific.
That's Across the Pacific.
Yeah.
You know what it is with the contract studio system of those days. Yeah. You know, you saw a lot of these characters in different interchangeable parts. You know, winding up. I can't probably a bunch of movies that Sidney Greenstreet did with Bogart
and Peter Lorre.
Peter Lorre and Claude Rains and all
that. I love Claude Rains. I think he's such a fabulous actor.
Yeah, but I'm shocked to find gambling going on here.
Yeah, I mean, all four of them made a picture called Passage to Marseille after Casablanca.
I've watched that.
Which is the only film that has flashbacks within flashbacks within flashbacks.
And they didn't think of that. They still, I think it was a later film that they said there was flashbacks within flashbacks.
Do you prefer the older movies of the Golden Age?
Yeah, that's really my heart
Me
lies.
Me too.
Although I reviewed enormous numbers of movies in the 80s and from the dawn of the 21st century on.
How do you feel about the colorization that Turner took?
I understand why he did it, because at that point the copyright law would have thrown his films into the public domain in a few years, which didn't happen because they changed the copyright law. But yeah, it was a pretty crude process. I mean, those pictures looked pretty god awful.
Yeah.
And I mean, the strange thing is that they've actually perfected it since then.
Go on.
I mean, I don't have a problem with colorized film, really. I mean, as long as the original version is available. The same with films where they've been converted to 3D. I mean, I think the 3D version of The Wizard of Oz is fantastic. And I think the 3D version of Titanic is fantastic.
I didn't know they did those.
Do you have a genre that's of interest to you more than any others?
I like musicals a lot. I mean, I like wacky stuff like, The Gang's All Here. I like the Astaire Rogers movies. I mean,
she was great too. They just didn't get Ginger enough credit because I really like her as an actress.
And among
most of her stuff.
And a couple years ago, I got into trouble because I said that Singing in the Rain was not the greatest MGM musical. Yes, it's a great film, but The Bandwagon is an absolute masterpiece.
Somebody wanted to judo chop you. Did you give you a judo chop?
If they put you in a room by yourself with a gun to your head and said, pick one movie that's your all-time
favorite. It probably would be Casablanca. I mean, with The Godfather pretty close behind.
I'm right with him. Mm-hmm. I'm right with you.
I don't have a favorite. I couldn't. So are those the films you'd watch if you're watching television and you see it's on, you'd sit down and watch it again?
Yeah, it's pretty hard to resist. You know, yeah. Even though I have multiple copies of both at home.
I know.
The fascinating thing, though, about those movies, especially for me, The Godfather, is every time I watch that movie, I see something I might have missed. And I've watched that movie at least 50 times.
I've never seen
50
it.
50 to 100 times. Maybe.
Yeah, that's a pretty good definition of a great movie. Citizen Kane is another one. You can watch that 50 or 60 times, and you'll spot different things.
I was going to ask. I've spotted different things, but I was going to ask you: do you think it's as good as everybody says it is? Because I go.
What, Godfather?
Citizen Kane. Oh, like the top movie.
Well, I mean, I think it is. I mean, it's less popular now, particularly in critics. For years, it was they do an annual critics. I think it's every 5 years in Britain, they do a critics poll, and they've been doing it for a very long time, for 30 years. Citizen Kane was the top of the pops, and then a couple of years ago, it dropped to like number five, and Vertigo was the.
That's number one, I think, now. You know what I didn't like about Citizen Kane? I just wish that they had done the makeup better. That was distracting to me. You know, like when they aged them and you could see the putty. And I heard that Orson Welles hated his nose and he would have, because he said he had a small nose and he would put putty in it to make it a better nose. Is that the truth?
Yeah. Now, the thing is, I mean, I've seen this a number of times, and the last couple of times I saw it in a really, really high definition, new transfer, and the new transfers of these on these films actually show you more than people saw back in 1941. They're way sharper, and you weren't really meant to. And I see this in film after film. You don't really meant to see that people are wearing makeup, but it's very obvious in these kinds of transfers.
So with all of movies now, you very rarely see a movie in the theater for any period of time. They seem to just almost immediately go on to cable TV or be available on pay-per-view. Where do you see the future of these movie theaters? There was a time when they started going to the multiplex. Now some of them are going backwards into smaller facilities. I mean,
well, there are all kinds of films being made, and increasingly the multiplexes are devoted to the big event films where they might show them on 9 or 10 screens in one theater,
like Star Wars or something like that.
And basically everything else is sort of filler they use between, these big event movies. But, it's sort of exciting, the sheer variety of films that are being made right now. because the digital revolution has really, you know, opened up filmmaking to a much wider, group of people. You can make a film on your cell phone.
Yeah, I know. That's amazing.
That's amazing.
And I've seen
right?
it, but it's true.
I was actually thinking of wearing a body camera and just taping different things that go on in the course of my day that are so ridiculous. Mm-hmm. People never believe that they happen.
Or you can start your own, internet TV station now,
yeah.
and which, the adventures of Alan.
Yeah,
run it 24/7.
Yeah, listen to my delusional mind. I'll think people want to watch it.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah, people can watch.
Does he snore, Carolyn? That is what we want to know.
Yeah. People can
watch. Oh my God.
Well, that's because he sleeps sitting up.
And trust me, somebody will be doing that before long.
Oh, I think
taught movie courses in colleges at all?
No, I've never taught. I took a couple classes at the New School in the 1980s. I took one in filmmaking. I actually made the world's worst student film.
What was it about?
It was about a film critic with romantic problems.
I think it's a good premise.
Like 99.9% of student films are autobiographical.
Yeah.
And mine was no exception.
It's kind of funny though.
I mean, the only thing I'm proud of is that I somehow managed to film a good part of it in Central Park.
Good for you. So you did that. A lot of people don't do that. Now they do. Ugh. But I want to ask you, who was your favorite in the day? Let's say the old time actors and actresses. Who was your faves?
Bogart. I mean, his style just does not date. I mean, there are a lot of actors from the 30s and 40s whose style is very dated.
Yes.
But Bogart doesn't date. William Powell doesn't
date. I love
date.
Him. He's like a DDB, my dead dreamboat. One of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think Betty Davis dates. Although, a lot of Joan Crawford's work dates, except, Mildred Pierce is great.
I love Mildred Pierce.
Yeah.
Vita was
and
such
Blythe
a bitch.
And Blythe is still alive, though.
Yes.
Yeah, she is.
Yes,
she
just
is.
Wrote an autobiography.
She was at the TCM Festival a couple of years ago talking about Mildred Pierce and how nice Joan Crawford was to her, because they had tested a great number of actresses for that part.
She was perfect as Vita. Yeah. You just wanted to kill her.
It was a great movie.
And Zachary Scott played a terrific wormy creep.
Yeah, everybody was perfect in their roles.
Did you guys ever see, well, I'm sure you have, Scarlet Street, Fritz Lang?
Oh, yeah, with Debbie G. Robinson,
yes.
and Joan Bennett.
And Dan Duryea.
And Dan
Wormy
Duryea.
Creep Deluxe.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Dan Duryea, yes.
Yes, I love that movie.
Well, yeah.
It was just on TCM the other day, yeah. I love it.
Yeah, some of those movies were great. I mean, and on top of everything, if you ever go out to Hollywood and take a tour of the studios, the movie studios, you really see things that were incredible, like how they did the Ten Commandments scene in, where the water...
Paramount, yeah.
The water...
turned red, parting of the Red Sea.
Yeah, not only that, parting of the Red Sea was unbelievable. And, then you also... learn how a lot of the executive offices are used in movie scenes as well, like in the Paramount studio. But I actually happen to live where the first American studio was for silent films.
The
Fort Lee, New Jersey. Yeah.
I didn't know that
they did
had
them on
that.
The cliffs over there.
Ah.
Yeah, I've just been reading an excellent book on that subject, Hollywood on the Hudson. And when I worked at the Bergen Record, I did a few stories about filmmaking and that whole area. There were like 20 studios in Fort Lee and the surrounding towns.
The weather got to us. They wanted warmer weather for year-round movies.
It was the weather and some of the talent was balking at taking the ferry out to Fort Lee. Because that was the only way you get there on those, because there was no George Washington Bridge.
That's right. And then also, where I grew up in Brooklyn, there was a silent film studio.
Vitaphone.
Yes, right across the street from NBC. NBC now has a studio. I don't know if they still use it.
No, they tore down that whole facility a couple of years ago.
the red brick building?
Yeah.
That's where they used to do Cosby there. And SNL was actually done there one year when 30 Rock had a fire. Yeah.
Hmm.
In the very early years of SNL. I think that building's still there. You sure that building was still there?
The Vitaphone Studio.
No, the Vitaphone Studio, but there was an NBC.
You mean Astoria?
No, in Brooklyn. Right across the street from that Vitaphone Theater, which is now a girls' yeshiva.
No, that's that close. That whole area has been redeveloped, including, you know, there was a play for people just at least leave the water tower. And, but they weren't even leaving. But they continued making shorts, through 1939.
Wow. Yeah, and I know the building across the street housed Cosby. They did the Cosby show out of there.
But the Astoria Studio is still
here.
That was the beginning
of the comeback, right, of New York as a film.
They're doing a lot of stuff here.
Time to get your acting card.
I have. Extra work and all that. Extra. There she is, getting rained on without an umbrella.
Have you ever been in a film?
No, I've never been in a film. I think you could see my hand in my
student film. You have lovely
film.
Hands, very lovely hands.
Well, thank you.
They could be models. Mm-hmm. I was asked to be a hand model when I was 20-something.
Really?
Like 22. Who'd want to be a hand model? You had to always wear rubber gloves. You had to have your hands. But I knew a guy who did it, and he made $200,000 a year being a hand model or a foot model, something like that.
But the leading lady in my student film, she was a foot model, I think.
Was she? Mm-hmm. I think she had to have size 7 feet for foot modeling. Mm-hmm. That was the thing for that. How well did you know Robert Osborne? Because I was so sad when he died. I love that man.
Super well, but I knew him well enough to know that he was just as amazing in person as he was on TV. I mean, there was not an act. He was incredibly generous. He was incredibly nice. He was incredibly knowledgeable.
His knowledge
and
wow.
I mean, I've never been terribly comfortable on TV, although I've been doing it since the 80s. But the two segments I did with Robert were the best TV I ever did because I just felt so comfortable. He really had an extraordinary ability to make people, relax.
I loved him. TCM is my, what do I call it? You have comfort food. TCM is my comfort channel. Because all this shit that goes on, excuse me, people, all the crapola that goes on in the world, I can't live with that all the time. I got to watch something nice on TCM or something I DVR'd. And he was my comfort man because he's so comforting.
Right.
He just talked to you and he was like my comfort movie, comfort man. And
Cherry Garcia ice cream.
No, I hate that kind.
Oh, yeah.
And he really introduced a whole generation to these kind of films. I mean, you go to the TCM Classic Film Fest, and you're surprised at how young the people are. I mean, people in their 20s and in 30s. And,
Buffs.
Well, what they say is what's old is new, right?
But not everybody appreciates it. There are many people, say black and white, oh, my God, no. But Pre-code. I wanted to talk to you about pre-code.
She hates black and white films.
Do you?
Yes, she does.
Really?
Oh, we'll have to
turn on your wife.
We're going to have to shun you for 5 minutes.
Throw you under the table.
So
we have that fight all the time.
We're going to talk about pre-coders for a while because those, I mean, if anyone saw some of these, I think they would go, whoa.
Jaw-droppers, yeah. I mean, you ever see the story of Temple Drake, right?
Yes. I saw all of them.
Which was a film that you could not see that film for many decades. Freaks.
Woo, that was another one. Was she actually a voluntary hooker, Temple Drake, at that time, or did she just think she couldn't go home? I just never got that.
She was shamed. She was traumatized.
Yeah.
I mean, I think she had PTSD, as we would call it today.
Yeah.
And Jacques LaRue is just, he's so slimy.
Oh.
I mean, that was a film that was a role that George Raft turned down.
He turned down so many.
He said, I'm not doing that because this will wreck my career. LaRue never really, became, I mean.
But he was great.
Paramount was grooming Jack LaRue to become a big star like Raft, and he never quite made it. He had a long career as a character actor into the 70s.
But, did he really?
Yeah.
Wow. I always thought he was
played,
cute.
He played priests, and he played priests in a couple of movies. And he plays a priest in the Hemingway thing.
Now, Lou, what was
Farewell to Arms?
What was the name of the actor? I always search for him because I saw him years later in a lot of 1970s TV shows like Rockford Files.
Oh, Elijah Cook Jr.?
He was in Maltese Falcon. He played Elijah Cook.
I
Elijah
love
Cook Jr.
Him.
Elijah Cook Jr.
Love
yeah.
Him, love
he was great. I mean, he was
Rosemary's Baby.
Yeah. I mean,
he actually made a couple of musicals. He could sing. There's a music called The Pigskin Parade. I think it was first feature, and he and Alan Ladd have small parts, and they both sing in one in
I
one
love
scene.
Him.
Then, and Key Largo. There was great film. Mm. There was one guy. He was the young whippersnapper.
The guy who goes,
that
laugh.
That wasn't Richard Widmark, but who was that guy? He reminded me of him.
Yeah, he was like a warm
He was sort of a Dan Duryea.
Better looking Dan Duryea.
Richard Widmark combination. Do you know what I'm talking about?
You know, was he heavy set?
No, he was
very
the young
thin.
Guy.
I'm blanking on that. I'm sorry.
But he was very. That's a great movie.
And
I
that
love
was
that movie.
Also King Tut was in that movie, wasn't he?
King Tut.
The guy who played King Tut on Batman. He was the
Victor Bruno. No. Victor Bruno would have been like 12 years old at the time.
Yeah, because when he did Baby Jane, wasn't that his first film?
Yeah.
Who played the bartender?
The actor you're talking about there is the one I was thinking of, Thomas Gomez. It was the first Hispanic actor nominated for an Academy Award.
For what?
For Ride the Pink Horse with Robert Montgomery.
Was he the guy I'm thinking of who was in, I just saw this for the first time, Phantom Lady? Was he the cop? I like him.
He's a great actor. In fact, he was on the short list for The Godfather.
Wow.
Couple was very interested in him, but unfortunately at that point he was dying of cancer and he couldn't do it.
Elijah Cook Jr. was in that as well. The drumming, boom, 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 with in Phantom Lady. Good
Phantom
one. You should
oh,
see
yeah.
it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. He played a real,
He played a drug addict, you know?
Yeah. It was good. It was a good flick. The guy, I don't really know. Who was the lead in that? He's really handsome dude. Not a good
actor.
That was
Joan Crawford's second husband.
Was he really?
French Otone.
No. Oh, he was the killer who did this when he'd get twitchy and he'd do this with his hands.
There's got to be a book in you, no? Or you don't want to write one? Or
I'm working on a memoir of my misadventures as a film critic and in other avenues of journalism. I mean, I was the city editor of the Post for about a year, and that was an interesting adventure.
That must have been.
Yeah. And then the other book I'm working on is this strange history of movies on television. I mean, the terrible things they did to movies in the early days. I mean, they would chop them. I mean, King Kong was on TV starting in 1956, and in the early years, they would take a 100-minute movie, and they would cut it to 75 minutes so they could fit it in an hour and a half time slot because they thought that people wouldn't have the patience to watch a movie for two solid hours. And I mean, there were actually stories, newspaper stories where the people at WOR defended that and said, well, we're actually improving these movies and making them move faster, as well as making room for commercials.
I remember my dad telling me when he was growing up, he'd see a B movie, then the A movie, and then a cartoon short in between.
All for a dime.
You know. I guess like the Bowery Boys or the East Side Kids were like the B movie.
Oh my God.
Three Stooges.
The East Side Kids. Did you know? They went into the 50s, the East Side Kids.
Well, they started out as the Dead End Kids in an A movie with Humphrey Bogart.
I remember.
Sylvia,
that was a great movie.
Sylvia Sidney, Joel McRae.
Yes. Fabulous movie.
Alan Jenkins was in that.
I love
Claire
him.
Trevor. Claire Trevor and...
I love Claire Trevor.
Wow, that was a great...
I mean, it was one of her prostitute roles, yeah.
That, yeah. Oh, that's right. She came back at the end, right?
Yeah.
She did great in Key Largo. She deserved that Academy Award for Best Supporting Actress.
Yeah.
She was great. Did you see her on TCM?
Yeah.
When he was talking to her, and she said how nervous she was, and she thought he said, "Okay, now do it."
How long ago was that?
The movie?
No, Claire.
When Claire Trevor was on.
She's been gone. She's been gone a long time. But
they rerun it, but I think it was about 15 years ago.
They were very smart. They taped a lot of interviews starting in the 90s.
And she said she was terrified because she wanted to learn how to sing.
Right.
And they knew it, but he said he didn't want her to sing good.
Yeah, I mean, she had actually been in some musicals with Gene Raymond.
I mean, there's still some little vestiges of old Hollywood left. You got Kirk Douglas, who's about 100.
Unbelievable. Sidney Poitier, 90.
Sidney Poitier, yeah. Blythe, who we just spoke about, Olivia de Havilland.
100+.
Yeah.
Anyone else you can think of?
There are many.
Who's still there?
Well, Debbie, yeah, we lost a few back-to-back. Yeah. I think Debbie Reynolds died. Yeah.
And her daughter. Dick Van Dyke's still living and looks fabulous.
Dick Van Dyke, yeah.
He's in his 90s, I believe, and he's married to somebody 40. Go get him, Dick.
Shirley Jones?
She's still alive. Sure. I tried to get her, and I don't think she's doing well. I heard from her assistant, and she's
Doris Day. Doris Day is still around.
Doris Day, right? What's she, about 96 now?
95, I think. I was looking at her picture, and I was reading about her on one of the, because I go through the classic movie blogs, and I know you have one, Lou. You started
one. Yes, yes.
That's where I found Lou.
You know, you could just think of a movie theater commissary being packed in the 1940s and 50s would be. Now, if you got those same people back, maybe they would fill a table, right? I mean, from that era.
Well, it's harder for the TCM people to get guests.
Well, it's like
because they're dead.
Well, it's like the oldies stations don't do 50s music anymore now. Oldies is considered like the 70s and 80s.
Yeah.
I think that's what's eventually going to happen to stations, you know, like TCM. I mean, the classics are going to be some maybe 50s and 60s movies.
Well, they have 50s and 60s.
Yeah, they have been
and
edging
70s.
More and more newer movies, yes.
Yeah.
I think
because these are old movies. These are old movies to a lot of people.
A 1960 movie is almost 60 years old.
Yeah. I mean, who's going to say that, you know, the Manchurian Candidate isn't a classic movie?
Oh, I love that
movie. You know, it's one of my all-time favorites.
Mine too. How old was they were all fabulous. Frank was great. Yeah. Lawrence Harvey.
What was that movie with Burt Lancaster and Kirk Douglas?
That was like a war film.
Yeah,
they were
Frederick
generals.
Mark was actually the president in that. That's
Frederick
a very
Morris.
Underrated actor.
I love Frederick
Mark is one of those guys that almost every film I see him in was a three and a half, four star movie.
He's a great actor. I loved him in Best Years of Our Lives.
With,
he was so real.
Dana Andrews and
Teresa Wright and
Russell, the guy with
and Myrna Loy.
Russell, yes.
Yeah, Myrna.
Myrna Loy and the one from the Lou Gehrig story. Right?
Yes, Teresa Wright.
Teresa Wright,
mm-hmm.
Very underrated.
Love it. Love that movie. Do you know anything about that? What happened between Joan Fontaine and Olivia de Havilland?
I did a piece on that. I mean, they always had a fraught relationship, even as children. They never really got along.
What was the age difference between them? A year or two?
It's a year or two. Yeah, they're pretty close, but. You know, and then they came to Hollywood, and you know, Joan, you know, Olivia got there first, and you know, and pretty quickly became a star. But Joan sort of struggled for a few years. She was in B movies, you know, which Olivia never was. You know, she was, you know, Fred Astaire's first non Ginger Rogers partner, and got panned mercilessly.
Who was?
Joan Fontaine.
Ah.
A damsel in distress.
I heard of it, but I haven't watched it.
Yeah, it's not a bad movie at all. But you know, it's a thankless role.
Did she get the first Academy Award? Is that why that was like a? But Olivia did too.
Yeah, I mean, you know, she was the first one to win the Academy Award and
for Suspicion.
They eventually had a falling out, for they did not even speak for many years.
Yes, and that's so sad, but yeah. And they were totally different people. I loved Rebecca. She got the Academy Award for Suspicion, which I hated because the ending was so ridiculous.
Yeah.
The buildup, they didn't want to have Cary Grant as a bad guy.
Yeah, the studio imposed that ending.
Did Cary Grant want to be the bad guy either? He might have not been too keen.
Well, he had ambitions to be a more serious actor than he usually was.
He was a great actor. Yeah, In my eyes, he did comedy, he could do slapstick, he could do all sorts
Bob
of
Hope
stuff.
And the Lemon Drop Kid, right?
Was he?
Cary Grant?
I don't think Bob so. Hope. Jack Lemmon, maybe, wasn't he? Mm.
Well, the Lemon Drop Kid, that's Bob Hope. Bob Hope and Marilyn Maxwell, one of his
Paramours.
Yeah, one of his Paramours.
Oh, wait a second, maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah. Paramours, yeah. I mean, I did another story about
Bob Hope's
Paramours.
He had a lot. Mr., you know, Doris.
He got around. He got around. Yeah, Doris Day. Yeah, I mean, yeah.
He did Doris?
Well, it was a biography published a few years ago which quoted one of his associates as saying, that he and Doris were briefly not. They did a tour for Easter Seals or something.
Yeah.
And so they one day they arrived at the Burbank Airport, now known as Bob Hope Airport.
Yes.
And to get together mm-hmm. and Dolores, his long suffering wife, you know, like shot her a look and that was the end of it.
Oh.
Yeah.
But she knew. She knew all the stuff is going on, Dolores. Come on.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, she as much as admitted it in an interview after he passed away.
What about Spencer Tracy and Katharine Hepburn? Do you think that was, you know, I watched Woman of the Year recently, and I saw the chemistry there with her. Yeah. She never seemed playful or even like she had any kind of sex thing going on.
Yeah.
In that movie, she's laying on top of him, and you can see her being playful and womanly. That's the only movie I've ever seen her do that in, and realistically. And they had a great chemistry in that movie.
Yeah, they have fantastic. I mean, Adam's Rib is, to me, one of the funniest movies ever made.
Did you get? You didn't see it because you don't like Black and White. But it's great. You've seen it, didn't you? They played husband and wife.
Yeah,
Judy Holliday was in it.
And Tom Yule and
the lady from Singing the Rain. The voice. The lady.
Gene Hagen, yeah.
Yeah. So that was it. I love something you tweeted the other day. I don't know what it was from, but I think it was... I don't know if it was movie producers or studios, and they've given a name of a critic, and one of the critics said about you, we just had two words. Remember, you tweeted the other day.
Oh yeah. F that effer, yeah.
I loved it. I thought that was great. What did you do to him?
I don't know. I mean, I've done a lot of things to a lot of people. I've panned an enormous amount of movies. I've ridiculed actors. I mean, I ridiculed De Niro. I've ridiculed Pacino. And I mean, for 15, 16 years, I did an annual Turkey Awards.
I love those.
As great an actor as I've always felt Al Pacino is, in his later years...
Caricature. Bad.
Yeah, in his later years, I always felt he was overacting quite a bit.
Oh, yeah. That's yeah. Putting
that
him on
correct?
List. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
No. So that's when you wrote him as a turkey?
Wasn't my imagination.
No.
Yes.
I wrote him.
I gave him the award, I think it was the year he did Geely.
Geely?
That was the mega bomb with Jennifer Lopez and Ben Affleck.
Oh, that one where she was a lesbian who fell in love with Ben Affleck. She was a hit woman or something.
Yes.
Yeah. Al Pacino was in that?
Yes, he was.
The one with Keanu Reeves, he plays the devil. He was so over the top in that one.
Now, I know
that's when that was one of his better movies of the 90s, I think.
Now, I know of at least two movies that Al Pacino and Robert De Niro were both in, but only one that I know of that they did scenes together in. Little trivia. Did you know the answer to that? He would know that, Lou, right?
Yeah, the one they did scenes together, I don't remember what it was. It was a terrible crime picture. I mean, it was an embarrassment to both of them.
Was it like in the 2000s?
Yeah, in the 2000s, yeah.
Heat. Where it was a perfect example of Pacino's overacting. And then I know the other movie. Do you know the other movie they did? The Godfather. No scenes
actually, it would be three.
There's one very recent too, right?
Yeah, that would be three. That's what I thought.
That
was the one I was thinking of.
And then they had, I think De Niro over X as well. And he got, didn't Pacino get the Oscar for Scent of a Woman?
Yeah. Hoo ha, yeah.
Yeah, he,
Well, De Niro, yeah, has been overacting a little bit too.
Yes.
But he's also showed a great range to go into comedy later.
He did some good stuff.
Yeah.
So who, what movie did you pan that went on to be a huge success?
Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Really?
Yeah.
You gave it really like.
What? I mean, I thought many years later, I disavowed that review. I was obviously wrong.
That will be in the memoirs, I think, right?
Yes, it will be. Yeah. Yes, I've written about my reversal on that one.
Let's go vice versa. Movie you thought was fabulous. Oh, everybody's going to see this. It's great. Stinkeroo.
The Da Vinci Code. I haven't even been able to watch it again. I don't know what possessed me.
You loved it though when you watched it?
Yeah, I loved it when I watched it. I wrote this gushing review.
Four stars. Yeah. You know who we had Donnie here. I think I sent you from Jersey Boys. Donnie was in Jersey Boys on the musical in there, and Lou wrote him up. So nice. Made a mention of Donnie, and I said you were going to be here today. So he said, say hey, and thank you. But that's nice.
Yeah, I like Jersey. I like Jersey Boys.
Yeah, you gave it,
not,
I think,
did
four.
Did not get good reviews.
You did. I think you gave it four. Because I was reading it, I think, yesterday, checking it out. Mm-hmm. I was reading Rotten Tomatoes and things like that.
Oh, my collected works, yes.
Yeah. Is someone coming in? So George just kind of came in. Oh, that's it. Good. So, Lou, obviously, how often are you writing on your blog?
I'd say at this point, sporadically. I haven't really established the schedule.
Yeah. Are you ever going to do the blogathons? I love the blogathons.
Yeah, I mean, I would. Yeah, I did a blogathon once about eight years ago, and I mean, it was about film preservation blogathon, and I wrote a piece about an obscure Randolph Scott Western from 1933, which I said was badly in need of restoration. And somebody who was on the board at the Museum of Modern Art saw it and said, "Oh, this sounds like it's, worthwhile." And they restored it.
Yeah. Okay, so you have a few more minutes with Lou, and there is a question I do. Another question I want to ask you. I have all my notes, but I can't read them because my writing is horrific.
Yeah. I look like a doctor. I know that feeling very well.
I don't write anymore. It's all one finger, on my thing. I don't know. I failed typing class. All right, there's one. Okay, so we did discuss pre-code, Babyface. First one I saw with...
Oh, Babyface is fantastic.
My mother laughed her whole way through it. Barbara Stanwyck played a super slut. But the bad part was the ending. They had two different endings. And I just didn't like the... That was so stupid. He had to go back to Pittsburgh, of all places. Come on, you see the pipes of stinky stuff. You know what I mean? That was crap. But I love that movie. I like it much better than Redheaded Woman with Jean Harlow, whom I loved. Poor lady.
I've never been able to get Redheaded Woman.
Yeah, I don't like it. I don't. It's annoying.
There's something off-putting about that picture. Maybe it's Chester Morris. I don't know.
Yeah. He's sort of like a bull terrier. Mm-hmm. No lips and kind of like, yeah, sorry, but not quite. Yeah, see. Yeah. So I think we should wrap it up. But Lou,
it was a great episode. I could go on for hours.
I could too.
Movies. I love movies.
I do too.
I'm happy to come back anytime. I really
would. You really?
This, yes.
I hope you do, because we love it.
Yeah.
And this is like my favorite movie stuff, and I have so much that I didn't get to. And I was writing. I kept telling Lou, I'm adding questions, but I can't read them, so I'll have to type them and bring them next time.
Yeah. You gotta slow down, girl. Slow down.
Yeah, man. Mm-hmm. Yeah, see? I will.
Slow your roll.
I will, baby. Okay, so we want to thank you. Lou, what do you want to promote? Anything? You're on Twitter.
I'm on Twitter. I'm on, you know, I'm on Facebook. Twitter, I'm Lou Luminick. I'm at luminick.com, and my blog is, you know, called The Bad and the Beautiful.
And the memoirs will be coming out?
Yeah, someday in the future.
You right. are a promotion machine.
I know. I'm an absolutely shameless promoter. And in the meantime, there are about 20,000 pieces of mine on, you know, at nypost.com.
There you go.
Gotta read them. I like a lot of loser reviews.
Anything on your end to promote?
My other show, my other broadcast, The Broad's Way. I'd love you to be on. My partner wanted to be a film critic, and she was so fascinated about you being here tonight. So perhaps you'll come on that.
Sure, yeah. Everybody wants to be a film critic. Yeah.
I never did.
Everyone wants to be a critic.
Not I. Why do you look at me? Okay, so Lou... This is a Broadway Comedy Club. This is BWRN Radio, and you can catch us at Spreaker.com in BWRN in your face with whoever in grace. And thank you,
Lou. What's in that water? You have anything that you kind of slipped in there? Vodka, gin?
I haven't even had any water. I'll drink a Coke. Okay, thanks, everybody. And thank you so much, Lou. You were fabulous. Yay to Lou. He's coming back.
A fellow movie guy. I love it.